On this edition, my guest is world and electronica music artist Donna DeLore. We'll be talking about her new album, Universal Light. It's remixes from the Unchanging CD. I'm Richard Brendan, and the conversation begins now. With a string of best-selling and much-loved albums, Donna DeLore has become one of the reigning queens of world devotional music. Before dedicating her life to singing sacred mantras and lyrics of spiritual aspiration, DeLore traveled the globe for 20 years as a backup singer and dancer for Madonna, appearing in the documentary film Truth or Dare and on stage with the pop icon during numerous legendary tours. DeLore's own music combines sparkling pop savvy with a deeply felt sense of spirituality, and it's won her a strong fan base in the yoga conscious living community and beyond. Embracing styles as diverse as Celtic, Middle Eastern, Indian classical, and contemporary electronica, DeLore's musical perspective is as wide as the world itself. Her latest release, Universal Light Remixes, completely reimagines the songs from her album The Unchanging, and the attitude and risk-taking in the innovative musical arrangements and production really is amazing, especially with her beautiful voice. It's a joy to have Donna make a return trip to this program, and she's joining us from Los Angeles, California. Donna DeLore, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here with you. The sun just came out, and the sky is open. Beautiful here.
That's good to hear. You're talking about L.A., and as we're speaking, the same thing is happening here. So what a beautiful connection we're having.
Isn't that great?
It is great. Very much so. And it's a thrill to have you back on the program because I have been such a fan of your music. You have such a unique style. It's the kind of music that is not only deeply spiritual, but many of the tunes make you want to get up and dance, and that's my favorite thing to do.
Yay!
The Universal Light Remixes, your newest album, has really been received well by so many people. Have you been pleased so far with the reaction?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I feel like people know me and how much I love to dance, and I love rhythmic music, and I've been so inspired by rhythmic music since I was very young. So everyone knows that, you know, that yeah. Those are my roots, and I'm always going to have music. I'm always going to release music like that. So every record I make, I'm going to most likely do remixes.
Yeah.
And figure out a way to kind of put them together where there's a really nice flow for an album and release that out as well. So I love the different interpretations that remixers have given me.
Mm-hmm.
And I always put it out there, and I don't know, well, will it be an album or not? And mm-hmm. It all came together. Every mixer I sent The Unchanging to, they each picked a different song. Two of them didn't pick the same song. Mm-hmm. So that was really nice.
I want to talk about The Unchanging for a minute, because something I recently learned I wasn't aware of, that when you recorded that, that was one of your more personal albums. It was also a time when your father passed.
Yeah.
And I haven't experienced that yet, by the way. Almost all of my friends have, at least one parent or another. I'm trying to remember if I read this right, but somewhere I read where your father died in your arms. Is that correct?
Yeah, he did.
What was that like for you, that experience?
Oh, my God. It was amazing. You know, my dad and I had been so connected since I was so, you know, forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't live with my dad. My parents divorced when I was about 4. But I was so blessed to grow up with a father who was a musician and a producer and whose passion was music, and it was also my passion.
Yeah.
So I always had that really special connection with my dad. Mm-hmm. And I think it was kind of unsaid that out of the three children, we were probably the most connected because I chose that my life,
mm-hmm.
that path of music, and mm-hmm. we had that in common. We had a lot in common. I just related with my dad at a very young age, and we were friends. We were pals.
Mm. Your dad.
And my dad's composition teacher at one point when I was about 15 said to my dad, like my dad would come in talking about like different women he was dating and everything, and this man said, "Donna, your daughter Donna is the number one woman in your life." She is your number one devoted woman. And in the end, it really was that way when he died. And, of course, the way that everything was orchestrated by the mm-hmm. universe in that moment, mm-hmm. I was alone with him.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband was even in the room right mm-hmm. before then, and somebody rang the doorbell, and my husband went to get the door. And that's when my dad passed, with just me alone.
What?
And it was just, it was a miracle. I was so overcome with, like, such a blessing, such a feeling of being so, I felt so honored.
Mm.
And at the same time, I couldn't believe it was happening. You know, I'm just like, oh, my God. And my whole life with my dad flashed before my eyes. And the fullness of this love that I felt for him as I was holding him, like, it was so incredible mm-hmm. that I could feel that. I just felt so blessed to have a father and have a connection with another human being mm-hmm. that I felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt, once again, affirming, like, this is what life's all about.
Yeah,
you know,
it
these
really
connections
is.
And this sharing this passion and celebrating our lives together in life and in death.
It truly is. I remember something John O'Donohue wrote in a beautifully written book called Beauty, the Invisible Embrace, and he had a chapter on the beauty of death. And he said, you know, a deathbed is really a sacred altar. Something transforming and beautiful happens in that millisecond of time. When the body transforms the physical to spiritual. And it really opened up my eyes to the beauty of that, actually, and something that we all have in common.
It is so beautiful. And at the same time, when you're with a parent and they pass that way, you just start going through all these questions about your own mortality and your own life and, okay, well, how is it going to be for me? And you start, it's a window into another world, mm-hmm. and you're forced to become at peace with nature and what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But you don't have to get ahead of yourself. You know, it's like, but you have to look at it. And I've just chosen with my dad to let that experience, you know, make me feel more alive and more blessed. And I wrote a song that's going to be on my next album called Piano Man about my dad and how, it says, with my hands, you'll keep playing.
Yeah.
And in my whole experience with my dad, I kind of tell the story about this piano that was my dad's, that he learned on, that's in my living room now, that I play every morning. And how I look at his picture and I just feel him, and I feel him in my hands, and I feel him in every cell of my body.
Mm-hmm.
And more than ever, like, I feel this, it was like a new inspiration for music and everything, and for being even more of a student of life mm-hmm. and being more humble to mm-hmm. everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a deepening, you know, deepening experience. I put that last track, Life Without Boundaries, it's on the end of The Unchanging, mm-hmm. was a poem that I'd read by Thich Nhat Hanh. And I always want to put poetry to music, and as well as mantras and all kinds of other, you know, my songs, like Piano Man. I was just so inspired to make a song out of that and end the record that way, because that was like the deepening of my experience at that time.
Mm.
And that ultimate, I just love Thich Nhat Hanh's teachings and his point of view. So beautiful. And it really like resonates with me in a deep way. So it's kind of my way of, you know, expressing that point of view as well. This is how I feel when I look outside or I walk in nature. I feel what that song is saying. You know, we are life without boundaries. We've never been born, never died. We were free before we came here in this form, and we'll be free again.
We're talking about your newest creation, Universal Light Remixes. It's from the Unchanging CD, and it's been said that this album is yet another beautiful example of the successful bridge between world devotional music and electronica. What I want to do now is I want to go to one of the songs off this new album. It's Jai Madhukale, and it features a guest violinist, Lily Hayden. Did I get her name right?
Oh, my gosh, she's amazing. Yeah.
What can you share about this song as we get ready to go to it?
Wow. Well, this was a collaboration with David Starfire and Freak Nasty, which are amazing DJ remixers.
Mm-hmm.
They had asked me to be part of their group called Dub Kirtan All Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out to Pyramid Lake to this huge festival, Symbiosis. Huge, like, electronic and music festival. Played that late night set. That song is just a powerful, another expression of the energy of Divine Mother. And in this case, it's dubstep.
Mm.
And so it's really like incorporating those newer sounds, kind of underground dubstep, sounds with the mantra. And my hopes with that track is to appeal to a wider audience and to have a lot of, you know, younger people discover the energy of that and energy of this music, which is uplifting and inspirational.
Absolutely. We're inside the music today with world and sacred music artist Donna DeLore. We're talking about her newest work. It's a new album out, and that's Universal Light. It's remixes from The Unchanging. We're going to go to a song now called Jai Mata Kali, and we'll have more conversation at the end of the song.
Jai Kali Durga.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendan. It's a joy to have Donna DeLore on today, somebody who is so talented and has grown up in such a beautiful musical family. Before that song, Donna, we had talked a little bit about your dad. Your dad was a famous musician, actually, session pianist and producer Al DeLore, well-connected. What was it like growing up? And then if you add your grandfather, who I believe was also very accomplished in the music business. What was that like growing up in a family like that? No wonder you're on a musical path.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's so funny because my grandfather was just granddaddy. I went into my nana's and granddaddy's house, and he was always sitting in his big red chair, like smoking. And I didn't ever, because he was older then, I didn't realize who he had been. And he was like, he was a vaudeville star as a teenager. He ran away from home and joined the traveling show and ended up on Broadway as a juvenile lead. So he had this big career when he was very young.
Mm-hmm.
It's this classic story. I met my nana when he was the star of the show passing through her town. And she was like the cute teenager girl in the front row thinking he was singing to her. And he was. Thank God. And that's how I'm here. But they had kept in touch and got together years later.
Mm-hmm.
He raised my dad to be a musician. I mean, my dad was like, it wasn't, you're going to be a lawyer or a doctor. It was, by God, you're going to be a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw that talent in my dad and really disciplined him to be a great musician. So my grandfather had been with the Warner Brothers Orchestra and played on all the films for like 30 years, like Casablanca and Gone with the Wind. And I have a picture in my studio right now. I'm looking at a Fred Astaire movie that he did. And he was in it, and he's playing the upright bass. My nan always told me stories that, like, he was known for this special technique of slapping the bass that he had picked up from seeing some other player. And he, you know, all the people in Hollywood loved that. And he was friends with, he played tennis and friends with all the whole, that Hollywood entertainment social scene.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad was raised in that. So my dad grew up playing with big bands. And my dad was born in 1930, so when he was a teenager, you can imagine the big bands he was playing with around, you know, in Los Angeles, around Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on to playing Latin music, and when he was in the service in Las Vegas, that he got back to those roots when he was older, like 60, in his 60s, he put together a Latin band in Nashville. So my dad was like always into world music as well. He had a long career playing with Phil Spector, and then producing Glen Campbell. And my dad, I'm still discovering records he played on that I didn't know about. You know, so he had his long career. And I feel so proud to come from that. And my brother has a lot of talent. He's doing music, A.D. DeLore. He's carrying on the music. And my sister, who passed a few years ago, she was a singer as well. We all have it. And I look at my children. I have two daughters. I'm like, which one of you is going to sing? I'm like, still waiting. My one daughter plays clarinet, which is really great.
Uh-huh.
That she's, you know, she's at least learning an instrument. She's learning about music.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different perspective when you're studying an instrument. She's a music lover as well. I'm just so proud. And it helps me realize more about myself because I grew up wanting to be an entertainer and dancing and singing that I come from that.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. At what age did you do your first professional gig? Was it in commercials?
Yeah. My dad worked with a man named Jimmy Joyce, who was a vocal contractor. He hired him to put, I'm sure, to do like groups of singers on the records my dad was producing for Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
He knew this man. Now, this man was known for children's choruses as well. So he had a group of kids that he had auditioned and picked, hand-picked, to sing on different records and commercials and things.
Mm.
So there was one day that he was having auditions, so I got to go in and audition. And I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I was so shy. I remember waiting out in the living room to go into this little room where they were going to hear us sing, like shaking. And I went in there, and I just sang for the man, and he liked my voice.
Mm-hmm.
And within like a week or two, I got a dog food commercial.
And
then my mom was like taking me out of school, taking me into the studio in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I was in the studio, and there was, you know, I'd grown up in studios anyway, so I was comfortable. But this time I was on the mic, and in the control room, all the adults were staring at me. And I had to say something like, recipe, pee because my dog's pretty special to me. And there was another girl with me, and they were trading off giving us the solos. And I remember this inner feeling of, like, I really want to do the solo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wanted it, and I wanted to sing by myself. And I think I ended up getting the solo, and then we sang together on other parts. But then I did a lot of jobs. I did McDonald's, PSA, Kodak, Winchell's Donuts, Knudsen. I used to ride to school, and there would be a commercial on the school bus that would come on, like, "Hey, it's Canoe for Store Kinnear." You know, me singing the solo of a Knudsen yogurt commercial.
Uh-huh.
And it'd be, like, every day riding to school, I'd hear myself come on the radio. And it was really interesting, you know. It was like, okay, this is a skill I have. I love doing it. I just wanted to be an artist. I wanted to be like, you know, Stevie Nicks and Linda Ronstadt and Bonnie Raitt and, you know, Emmylou Harris. And so growing up, I had that skill to work, which was great to have that skill to fall back on being an artist.
Yeah. You've mentioned a few pretty cool artists there. I think you were a teenager when you spent some time in Nashville, correct?
Yeah, my mother died of breast cancer when I was 16, and I went with my dad kind of just start a new life in Nashville. My dad had been so well received there because everyone loved the records he did with Glen Campbell, and particularly the string arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone at that time wanted my dad to arrange strings on their records.
Mm-hmm.
So we went in, we got a little condo there, and made friends with everyone very quickly in Nashville, because it wasn't as big as it is now as far as Nashville's gotten to be a bigger city. But it was so sweet. I used to hang out on Music Row with songwriters and writers' houses. And it was like the perfect kind of growing up as an L.A. kid, I got to really see what the heart of the business was, which is songwriting and artistry.
Yeah.
And that was a nice, great experience for me. That was just being in a real, that's where it all comes from, you know. Mm-hmm. All the other stuff of performing and the glamour and the glitzy, the sparkle of Hollywood and the entertainment industry is like the icing on the cake, but you have to have that foundation there.
Mm-hmm.
So I started studying guitar, but I was also a dancer, and I was going, there was nowhere for me to study dance. I had to go to the local club, it was like a gay club, that I felt safe going and dancing at night just to dance and dance to rhythmic music, because I love to dance, and it was a great outlet expression for me.
Yeah.
And it just didn't have enough, so then I ended up coming back to Los Angeles a couple years later. But I was there and met so many people, and I love Nashville. It has a real special place in my heart.
Yeah. It's a great town.
Yeah.
We're inside the music today with world and sacred music artist Donna DeLore. We're talking about her newest album, Universal Light. It's remixes from The Unchanging, also getting to know a lot about Donna's very inspiring story. I want to go to another track off this new album. It's track 12. It's Luciana, which I believe is your daughter's name.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And now, she still wants to be called Lucy, but I keep telling her, one day you're going to want me to call you Luciana.
Well, I have to ask you, there's a little girl's voice that is so adorable. Is that hers?
That's her now.
Oh, my goodness.
So on The Unchanging, I literally was like, I was holding her, like breastfeeding when I was doing my vocal. And she was like making sounds. It's just the way it is at my house. We have to just do everything at once.
Uh-huh.
And... Yeah. All my records, like Lover and Beloved, my daughter Sophia, who's now 12, was in her little, like, spaceship, little play station, like, squealing all over the record, and just kept it. So, you know, I like to incorporate, like, the real life, what's going on into the record, because that's what happens. So now this is her, like, kind of singing. It's just like a little soundbite of her singing.
Yeah.
I
love this song. It's another great song from Donna DeLore. It's off her Universal Light remixes from The Unchanging CD. We're inside the music today, and we'll have more conversation. But first, let's go to another Donna DeLore song.
So fly, fly, up to the sky. Hope you never die. No, please never cry.
You are the light, you are the sun, you are the truth, you are the one. You are the joy brought down to me. You are the light shining eternally. Luciana, Luciana, you came to me out of a dream. Touch of your hand brought me back to life, and I can see God looking at me through your eyes.
Welcome back to the program. It's a joy to have Donna DeLore on today. Donna is, to me, one of the best world and sacred music artists going right now. And by the way, this whole genre of what I combine the two, actually, world and sacred music, it is just continuing to skyrocket in popularity, isn't it?
I think so. I was listening to it, like, once every couple of weeks. I listen to my Pandora station, and it's really interesting to hear, like, before it was just, like, chant music and me, and then I started, like, putting more of my remixes out there and really blending in the electronica with the devotional, the mantras and the positive lyrics and everything, and it's just such a great mix, and I'm hearing more and more songs and other artists coming up on my station, which I love. It's like, and all my favorite songs come up on my station, which is great. Like the Enigma, some of the Enigma tracks.
Oh my God, yes, absolutely.
It's so interesting. How does that happen? Like I didn't program that in. They're just going by the way things sound.
And, yep.
So I love, you know, alternative genres. And even though they may not have the exact kind of, on iTunes, it's hard sometimes to be like, okay, what is my record here? Is it is it singer-songwriter? Is it world? What is it? But I think the closest thing to what I'm doing is like world. I call it world electronica.
Yeah.
And it's really worldly with as far as its point of views and its instrumentation and the electronica. You know, we have the beats and, you know, working with remixers and programmers and everything with the music, the sacred music.
We had talked before this last song about how you found your way when you were a teenager. Your mom had passed. Your dad took you to Nashville with you. But during that time, I believe the year was 1987, something very pivotal happened for your life and for your career, and that's when you became part of Madonna's touring ensemble, dancing and singing back up. So I've got to talk to you about that. Tell me what that tell me what that was like working
what
with Madonna.
What special thing can I tell you that I've never told anyone about?
I was going to say, yeah. How many years did you spend with her?
Oh, my gosh, 20.
Ugh.
I mean, 20 off and on. And I never, honestly, every time I did a tour, like, you never knew if you were going to work with her again.
Mm-hmm.
It really, because, you know, it's such high level, and the people are, she's always, it's just that she's got so many ideas and, and what she wants and new concepts and everything. And I never knew if I was going to be part of the new concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know. But there was something really special there that stuck all over those years, and it was six tours, and it was... It was really a great experience. You know, I grew up with her in so many ways. She was a few years older than me is, and she was always this example. It was like this older sister who had kind of gone before you, and you got to see what you liked about what she's doing and what maybe, you know, I got to learn a lot, like what I wanted and what I didn't want. And she just was this amazing example of someone who worked so hard. And it was no mystery to me why she was so successful. It was not the kind of thing where maybe over the years, if I worked with certain artists on their records, I might come in and be like, how did this happen or something? But she was, it was so clear. She's the hardest working person I've ever met in my life. And it's just like, where do you get this energy and this drive? You know, but to work with someone like that, they really pull that out of you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what she was always about, challenging people, pulling it out. And it really made me, I mean, there's so many things that are so important to me in life that it's my own personal things, like spending time in nature and spending time, you know, whether it's meditating, being more still and quiet. And that became more important as I got older and working with her. And I had to find myself, my own music, my own expression in that context of that world, which every time I do another tour, I was somewhat in a different place. I was coming more from my own perspective and my own needs and wants. And when I started out when I was 22 with her, it was so easy to just get in that world and be riding around with my new best friend Madonna in her limo going to hang out with Billy Idol, you know, or whatever. It was a lot easier when I was younger and hanging out all night in clubs, dancing, and the music would never stop for us. We would just dance and dance and dance, and we never got tired.
Yeah.
You know, as I got older, other things were important to me, like sleeping.
Absolutely.
You know, I was like, on my rider, I mean, I had a juicer. That was in my dressing room. I had juicer and organic veggies. So I could, like, sustain myself doing those tours, and I could be the best I could, you know, I could possibly be.
Yeah.
But it was so perfect, the time I worked with her. The work, I'm so proud of it. You know, once in a while, my daughters will, like, they'll watch a video or something, and we'll sit down and watch something that I did. I feel like I really, like, I really danced to my potential, you know? I really sang to my potential in that in that show and working with her. So that was so exciting, working with someone like that. And always on to something new. You know, she was, I feel like I'm an idea person, too. I always have all these ideas, and that was nice to see. Another thing, just from her being a woman who had so much power and control, and I wasn't raised that way. You know, I was raised, my mom gave up her career to have children and unfortunately regretted it. And I didn't have, I wasn't raised with a mother or any kind of role model in my life until really, like, I met Madonna. And she was, like, this powerful woman who controlled everything, and she was the boss. And it was like, wow, I could be the boss too. You know, I can carry out my vision and manifest it and ask for all these people's support in helping me manifest my vision.
Yeah.
And so all these years, I finally, I found my own vision for my own self. And I have my band around me to help me manifest, you know, my ideas and what I want to give to the world.
What was your encouragement in 1993 when you made your debut as a solo artist? And you had a lot of success with the album you created.
You know, what happened was, like, because of the whole thing, Truth or Dare came out, and I was part of that movie, and there was a lot of press, and being with Madonna, it all, like, all of a sudden, spotlight was on me, and I had all these big record companies courting me to sign with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I still felt like, as a songwriter, as an artist, like, I did need more time to really develop. But all of a sudden, it was like, okay, you're getting a big record deal, you have to get a record done, it has to, you have to have a huge single. I mean, I was in that, catapulted into that world, and I wanted to be in that world, but I wanted it to be kind of gradual, you know, and you get into that world, and it's kind of like you better pick the best song to go out first, because if you don't have that first hit single, most of the time, you're not even going to get another shot.
Right.
You know, so Madonna gave me a song called Just a Dream, which was really nice. She really wanted to support me, and she gave me the song, but it was her song, you know, her vocals were on it. And it was a song she had written for Like a Prayer, but didn't put it on there because it had a slightly different style, a little more pop rock, and it was more of what I was doing, so she gave it to me. So making the whole record, the record company was so focused on that one track of being my first single. Well, I wrote another song called Praying for Love with one of my great friends, and I felt like it had more of like a spiritual message in it that I wanted to convey and come out with as a new artist, and I fought to get that released as my first single, and I won that fight, which was great. So that song came out first, and I did a video to it, and that got on a lot of radio stations. It was mainly a hit like in Japan, Southeast Asia. So I went over there and spent a lot of time promoting, and I loved it. It was incredible. A lot of places in Europe, and I was out. You know, when you're with a major company, they'll just send you wherever they get anything. Anyone's picking up on your record, they fly you there and you just work it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was all over the place. I was doing a video in Australia. I was just flying around the world all the time to promote myself. And I had a couple singles off that record and a dance remix that was like top 10 Billboard dance charts. And we had a couple mixes off that record like that, which it was a no-brainer because I'd come from this dance world and, you know, I had so many Madonna fans that wanted to follow me and support me. So that was really great. It was a huge experience for me. It was in a lot of ways just deep, though. It wasn't so soul-satisfying.
Yes.
Because I found myself in, like, bars in Scotland, like, trying to, like, do my, was it just a dream? You know, and people are like shouting out. I don't know. It wasn't so fulfilling. I was like, wow, this isn't exactly what I planned. And I got to like play these bars and jump up on the thing and do my little dance. I don't know. It was tough. I definitely had moments of like, I want to do something different. And the next record I was making for that same company, I had discovered world music. And I went to Turkey and I started. You know, I've been to Israel, and I was so inspired by all of this music and the instrumentation, the percussion. I started studying belly dancing, and I loved those rhythms. I wanted to make music. I also had been really into Sheila Chandra and another singer called Amina out of France. Beautiful. I wanted to do world music.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked into the company, and I was like, this is what I want to do. And they just kind of looked at me like, what? It was pretty funny. But those were the records that inspired me, and I really wanted to do that. So I was able to get out of that deal and start from scratch, just kind of making my own music. I made a record called Bliss with my partner at the time, Cameron Stone, who was a cellist. And that's when I started playing harmonium. And it was just such a different, it was a real turn for me to get into the artistry, get into the songwriting and my own artistry, and then build from there.
And it feels right.
Oh, my gosh. I tell artists all the time, no matter what, just make your music that you love.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find a way. If you're that passionate about it and committed to it,
mm-hmm.
it'll get out there. It'll reach people. And so what if it's 1,000 people versus 10 million?
Yes.
I mean, you're doing... You're you are following your bliss.
Yeah.
And that's making the world a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do you see your life going from here?
Oh, well, I feel like I have so much music in me, mm-hmm. and I have so mm-hmm. much, you know, potential with songwriting and recording and writing for films.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Love to do more. I was recently just involved in doing some vocal work for a film that's coming out called The Moon and the Sun. It's a major release coming out in April. I got called in because there was this beautiful mermaid character that needed a voice. She's a healer and is magical. And this is all, it's kind of like Avatar, where it's generated by the computers. So it's all, there's actors mm-hmm. in the film. It's mm-hmm. not animation. But then there was this beautiful character, this mermaid that gets captured from Atlantis and everything. And she needed a voice. So they called me in. The composer thought of me because he said, I need a real soulful, spiritual voice to express what this mermaid's feeling, because she doesn't really talk or anything yet. So I kind of came up with my own language for her and sang, and that was so much fun working in that context. I love it. I'd love to work more in film, and especially projects like that,
yeah,
where I could really share my gifts that are uniquely mine, where I can contribute. And I'm in a different band project that's mm-hmm. with a couple friends. It's more electronic,
mm-hmm.
called La Machine de Rêve. I'm going to be a lot of collaborations, and I'm going to be collaborating with Nikki Harris, who's my longtime partner from the Madonna
awesome.
World.
Awesome.
Yeah, I feel like I have so many ideas and so much to do. I really want to go in and just make a record playing piano with a string quartet.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what I'm going to do next. Yeah.
It's been
really stripped down after this remixes.
It's been such a joy to have you on today's program. And again, your newest album is Universal Light Remixes from the Unchanging CD. People, if they want more information about all the work and work yet to be created,
yay,
as well as tours, all they have to do is go to DonnaDelore.com. In closing, Donna, we're going to go to one of my favorite all-time Donna songs, and that's Sanctuary.
Thank you so much.
Can you share just a little bit about that song before we cut to it?
Yes, I had heard that song as a Christian hymn
yeah.
being sung,
mm-hmm.
and I had remembered it, and I loved it so much, and I was touring with my band, and we were in the car, and my drummer had like a djembe out or something, and I said, can we do this tonight? But I want to do this prayer, but I want you to play like a Middle Eastern groove under it, or, you know, so it's a little more kirtan-ish, and he right away played the groove, and I started singing over it, and then we played it that night, and then I ended up recording it on my album Sanctuary. And I love it. Mm. I love it. I love playing it, and it's a very, very special song for me.
Yeah. Donna, thank you so much for sharing your time, and thank you so much for creating great music in this world.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's always great to have Donna on the program. I look forward to a return visit from her with all the new projects she undoubtedly has unfolding. But now here's that song we were talking about, Sanctuary. We'll be right back after this.
Wake me up.
You're listening to Richard Brendan Inside the Music. We'll have much more, but first, a word from our sponsors.
This WICR program is underwritten in part by Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. They carry organic produce and bulk body care products such as shampoo, lotion, soaps, and shower gel. Their kitchen serves soup, sandwiches, hot entrees, and carryout food. Plus, they have a juice bar. Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. Their website is georgetownmarket.com.
Richard Brendan, Inside the Music, is underwritten in part by Natural Awakenings magazine. Each month, Natural Awakenings takes a practical look at the latest natural approaches to nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. The magazine also covers the products and services that support a healthy lifestyle. Natural Awakenings magazine can be found at most healthy lifestyle outlets. Their website is awakenindy.com.
Before we close out with another Donna DeLore song, I want to share about an event coming up this Tuesday. That's March 10th at 7 p.m. It's going to be held at the Athenaeum Auditorium at 401 East Michigan Street, sponsored by Journeys Fire Spiritual Center, and it's Master Stephen Coe, one of internationally renowned pranic healers. The title of his message that night, and it's a free event, by the way, is Pranic Healing and Super Brain Yoga. Pranic healing teaches you how to harness your life force to flush out stress, boost your vitality, and accelerate healing of common health problems. That's this Tuesday, March 10th, 7 p.m., free event, held at the Athenaeum Auditorium, 401 East Michigan Street, Indianapolis, sponsored by Journeys Fire Spiritual Center. I also came across this Marianne Williamson quote that I wanted to share with you. Marianne's been on the program before, one of my favorite spiritual teachers. There's a line in A Course in Miracles which says, "Love restores reason, and not the other way around. So living without heart might in a particular circumstance seem like the rational thing to do, or even, according to some precepts, the smart thing to do. But ultimately, the only sustainable, the only survivable option for the human race is that we begin living from heart, that we begin living with a greater emphasis, in fact, on a love-centric perspective. It's easiest for talk about love, even to be loved, and to embody love as long as people are behaving in the way we behave, right? And saying exactly what we want them to say. But life challenges us to find an ever more expansive love. Love not just for my children, but for children on the other side of town, and for children on the other side of the earth. A compassion that is not just for my interests, and not just compassion for people that it's easy for me to sympathize with, but also compassion for people that I might not like, and compassion even for people who might have betrayed me, or insulted me, or even worse. Love says, feed the children. We are the only advanced species that is systematically destroying our own habitat. What does love say? Repair and save Earth. It's part of the reason why I love so much these wonderful musicians and singer-songwriters that are coming on the program now, that through their words, through their music, and even the music that wants to help you get up and dance like Donna DeLore's music does, it's another way of raising the vibration, raising consciousness in this world. In closing, and we'll fade out with this song, here's another one of my favorite Donna songs. It's called Sky is Open.
You were born to fly.
discuss today's program, our website is richardbrendan.com. For senior producer Lisa Morrison, engineer Joe Bainline, and production coordinator Kate Miller, I'm Richard Brendan. Each week we're inside the music, where love is on the air.